Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. And WISEI was there this week. Starts out with Representative John Nygren's very emotional appeal. He vows, "I recommit myself to fighting the scourge of opioid addiction." After, he calls it the elephant in the room, his daughter was charged with two counts of reckless homicide. WISEI was there.
I have not spoke publicly over the last few weeks about this issue. But I do feel it's important just kind of address, you know, the gorilla in the room. Obviously, my daughter Cassie has continued to struggle with addiction. Even though you believe as a family member and as having loved ones that they are on a path to recovery and you pray for that every day, this is just a reminder of how difficult the struggle truly is. God's got a plan and that things happen for a reason. So because of that, I recommit myself to do the right things for our state to hopefully prevent other people from going through the difficulties and the tragedies that my family and others, many others, have been through.
You know, when a few months ago the Foxconn deal was announced, we had many of you in here celebrated. Governor Walker stood next to President Trump at the White House to announce the deal. He got to sit in the big Oval Office chair while Trump held the chair, like a proud father, and announced that Wisconsin would become Wiscon Valley. 13,000 jobs, maybe more. 22,000 indirect jobs, maybe more. We heard words like transformative and economic ecosystem. And he said the $3 billion deal, the largest public subsidy of a foreign corporation in U.S. history, would benefit the entire state.
And the only thing that they can talk about as some kind of a boogeyman is the fact that we have the largest economic development project in the country. The largest foreign investment in the history of our state. And if you live in the far left world of the people on this half of the chamber, that's a bad thing. How in the world can 13,000 jobs be a negative unless you are clearly out of touch with the reality of the average, everyday working Wisconsinite?
Hearing none, I will accept a motion to go into closed session.
So wait a minute, this is outrageous. You guys have credibility when it comes to talking about doing something about the job situation in this state. We have seen this body fail for 6 years to create family-supporting jobs. In Wisconsin, we are now 120,000 jobs off with the national pace.
Sir, I would
this
ask
body
you to
bears
let
responsibility.
Like I said at the beginning, Mr. President, if this is about a balanced budget amendment and Washington's not getting it done, even though Republicans control all three branches, get new Republicans in there. You may think this is about trying to deal with a national debt, but if this convention happens, you're going to be totally blown away, because I don't even think they're going to be talking about the national debt. They'll be taking an etch-a-sketch to our Constitution and doing it all over again. And lost in that is going to be the national debt.
And we can go and we can talk about going to Washington. I personally would have no interest in going to Washington right now because you can't get much done. I'd rather be in the state of Wisconsin where we can do stuff, and we are. The founders put this in place specifically for times when the federal government was not taking action when there is severe risk. There's no debate on severe risk. And there's no debate on if there's an issue with a debt in our nation. History is the best predictor of the future. And if you look back at every civilization, one of the leading causes in every failure of historical civilizations is debt. Every single time. So I encourage a yes vote on this. And again, thank everyone for their input and their questions as we walked through the three bills.
JR, 29-page contract released actually before the WEDIC board voted.
Yes.
I haven't read it all. Have you read it?
No, my coworker covered that whole thing this week.
Okay. Now, so it's available. There was a big fight over whether it was going to be available before, and it was. But 1:30, do I have the time right this afternoon? Governor Walker and Terry Gao of Foxconn sit down and ink this thing. And just your thoughts on what we learned over the last week in terms of new developments with Foxconn, and then we'll hear from Mark Hogan.
Well, walk the contract that a week ago they said, okay, we're going to actually release it to the board. So the board got it before they voted on it. Now they shared some overviews with the reporters, but we didn't have the entire thing publicly out there that everybody could read it before the board voted. So they shared it with the board. They got a couple of days. Tim Carpenter, state senator from Milwaukee, on the board, WEDIC board, told us on Tuesday that he'd gotten it, that they had taken time to defuse the nuclear bomb, as he called it, but he still didn't want to talk about details. We finally got this thing, went through it, and what's interesting is they added these kind of extra benchmarks about jobs, and they put Gao kind of on the hook. If you guys fall short, you got to pay. Now it's through a company he owns or something like that, but there's more skin in the game for Terry Gao to make this thing happen. That
The Journal Sentinel headline said Gao personally guarantees up to $500 million.
Yeah.
That sounded right to me, but I haven't delved into it.
I don't have the math that they got. I just know that there's, you read the contract, it's clear that he's personally kind of vested in this getting done. Now, it's like everything, you know, like how does that work? It's through a corporation he owns, all that kind of stuff. But they took time to address some of the concerns that we heard about, well, are there adequate protections for taxpayers? What if Foxconn falls short of 13,000 jobs? What if they don't invest the money? There are more step-ups to get these tax credits, which end up being basically subsidies for the wages they're going to pay their workers because of the way this is set up.
A big deal was clawbacks. And so I just want to quickly summarize from the three-page handout that we reporters got. The four clawbacks, which is the state could come back after some of the money paid Foxconn if, number one, if the company supplied false or misleading information. Number two, if the company left the zone to conduct the same business outside the zone or outside the state, Mr. Hogan said. If the company ceases operation within the zone and does not restart operations within 12 months, or if the company fails to maintain employment and capital investment levels as required in the contract through 2013. A week ago, we didn't know these clawback provisions.
Yeah.
That's true.
What's interesting, too, is people try to make a little bit of a deal about Governor Walker with his kind of announcement about re-election, that he wasn't really touting Foxconn in the announcement in Waukesha. And so his question was, he backing away? His people really pushed back hard on that idea this week, that he's not, you know, banning this idea whatsoever. And look, he's going to Racine to have his big, you know, to-do to sign the contract. But I do get the impression that people know that the farther away Walker is from the plant, the proposed plant, the less he's going to play it up compared to other jobs, because if you're in La Crosse and Eau Claire or Hudson, you know, what's Foxconn going to do for you? He's trying to make that case of a ripple effect, but you're not seeing a direct benefit up there versus if you're in the southeastern Wisconsin, you know, kind of corridor.
WisPolitics and WisEye are both going to be at that event today. Okay, now let's hear about from Mark Hogan, the CEO of Wisconsin Economic Development Corp., and then Democratic Rep. Dana Walks of Eau Claire, a candidate for governor, and why he voted no. Let's go to that right now, please.
Here to announce that this afternoon at our board meeting, we did approve the Foxconn transaction. And this is an exciting day for the state of Wisconsin. You know, what our goal in this whole transaction, it started 28 weeks ago on Friday, has been to provide the company the kind of flexibility and latitude that they need to invest up to $10 billion, create 13,000 jobs here in the state of Wisconsin, and at the same time create certainty around the protection for the taxpayers. And I think what we've done on a collective basis has been able to put together a contract that reflects and achieves both of those goals.
I voted no. My rationale is that $3 billion spent on one company within one industry is a risk that I think is too much for our taxpayers. I think we need to be accountable for taxpayer dollars, and I think $3 billion into one industry that's prone to technological changes is too much.
Jared, what strikes me about Dana Walks, he's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. He went through this thing with a fine-tooth comb looking for any nuclear problems. He said, I just think it's too much to give one company So I'm struck by a lawyer who couldn't find any major legal problems that he wanted to disclose now. What's your take on Wachs?
Well, I'm going to do the political one, which is that Gordon Hintz, the new Assembly Minority Leader, took Peter Barca off the Wiedek board and replaced him with Wachs. Now, that raised some eyebrows when it happened of, well, is Peter being punished or whatnot? But what I picked up was that Peter, when he was still a minority leader, was like, I've got too much on my plate. He was looking for ways off the border anyway. So when he was pulled off, it was more that, really interesting that when he was pulled off, Peter really praised Dana and his credentials to be on the board. It looks like it was kind of Hintz putting his imprint on the caucus, more of it, you know, the change to Gordon Hintz versus Peter Barca. But for Wachs, the big deal is, here's a guy who's running for governor who got free media and a platform to be featured in a lot of stories talking about how he thought there was a problem with Foxconn. So this is kind of a little boost for him in that regard. I heard some kind of rumbling from other campaigns last week that, you know, nobody really kind of open warfare about it, but, you know, they thought it was maybe gave him a little bit of an edge or an advantage other people didn't have.
It's very interesting because Dana Wachs, one of six, seven, or eight, pick a number, Democratic candidates for governor, is now kind of a cop on the WEDC beat in terms of Walker and whether he ever hits that 250,000 private sector job goal.
And don't forget, Matt Flynn had the motivation to go out there and actually do a news conference at the site of, which, you know, kudos to him from people I talked to that they did that. Other people did it from the Democratic field, but got his name out there too with Foxconn. Now, for Dana, one of the downsides of this is that he's one of how many board members? He alone's not going to stop a Foxconn or whatnot. It's more of a platform to kind of raise alarm bells and maybe kind of give more information out than maybe somebody else would. But he alone's not going to stop a deal like this, you know, this one or going forward.
Very true. Okay, lots to cover. So the next subject. Yesterday, the Board of Regents approved the merger of the 13 two-year colleges with most of the four-year universities. Now, there's five universities that won't be aligned with colleges, Superior, Stout, River Falls, La Crosse, and Parkside. Two of the regents, including the former state auditor, Janice Mueller, said it's going too fast. Mm-hmm. Tony Evers, Democratic candidate, also voted against it. But this is a big deal. This is the first major realignment since, I think, the 1970s in the UW system.
Yeah.
Your take?
The request to pump the brakes was ignored, and it was all systems go. Now, there have been people at the colleges saying, wait, how's this going to affect us? What's going to happen? But there is a push from President Cross saying, look, this is a necessity. We have to address the demographics of what's going on. This is how these places survive. We have to do this, essentially. And they are going full forward with
it. Which is most intriguing. When you look at the enrollment stats and the drop, you had two of these 13, UW-Manitowoc, UW-Marathon County, drop in enrollment of more than 50% since 2010, and you had several others that are closely behind it. It was interesting. Cross is quoted in the Journal Sentinel as saying, we really don't know how viable these two-year colleges are going to be 24 or 30 months from now. Mm-hmm. So that's really what at stake. What is at stake? Okay, Governor Walker, worst kept secret, he was going to run again 2 days after he turns age 50. This is what he told his re-election pep rally in Waukesha County. Let's listen to what the governor said.
I'm pleased. I am thrilled on behalf of our outstanding Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish and I to announce today that Rebecca and I are asking for 4 more years to serve as your governor and lieutenant governor to move Wisconsin forward. You know, as much as you look at our record and you think, boy, more jobs than ever before, more people employed in this state than ever before, historic levels of investments in K-12 education, freezing tuition at all of our UW campuses to make it more affordable for students and working families, looking at ways that we put more people to work and drop their welfare rolls, looking at the quality of our health care, all these things suggest that this should be a relatively easy reelection. But let me tell you, it's not going to be. The big government special interests in Washington, they've already made us a target in this election. I'm asking for independents and Democrats and anyone else out there because I need your votes to keep moving this state forward because there's more to be done. Are you with me? Are you with me? Are you with me? Then together, let's march forward and make this state even better. God bless you. Thanks for coming out. We'll see you on the campaign trail.
JR, three things the governor said. Wisconsin just received its best tax ranking in more than 50 years. We've cut taxes by some $8 billion by the end of 2018. More people are working than ever before. These are predictable. The governor said the question is not whether our conservative reforms have worked. They have. The question is whether you're going to stand with me to keep this forward progress going. One sentence from the Democratic chair: his promises have had the ultra-rich elite clinking champagne glasses for 7 years, while the rest of Wisconsin has been left high and dry. Martha Lanning, Democratic chair. Anything surprising in the governor's re-election announcement?
No. What I was kind of looking at a little bit was, one, the field for Democrats still kind of forming. You know, there's still not somebody standing out, really. And two, the environment we saw in Virginia and New Jersey. Now, I always caution you can't read too much into some things. We tend to, in politics, overreact to things.
Yeah.
But looking at Virginia, you know, yes, it's more of a blue state than it was before, but we went in thinking it was going to be close, and he won by 9 points. That typically happens where the party in power of the White House loses Virginia that first term for a president. What does this mean? Does this mean that there is a wave coming for Democrats? Is it, don't worry too much about it, because it is a blue state, a bluer state than Wisconsin might be right now, so that no big deal? Or you also look at it, Governor Walker is the chair of the RGA. RGA, first two races under his watch, lost New Jersey, which is not a shock at all, and Virginia. And Virginia put
which was a bigger upset.
They put $10 million in Virginia, from what I could tell from other stories, and lost badly.
And the Dems in the House of Delegates were 32 seats down, and control will be decided by recounts. Excuse me.
So that's it. You know, you dive in the numbers. Those delegate seats, most of them were run by Hillary Clinton last year. So are they really, you know, Republican seats that were flipped, or are they, you know, all kind of slice and dice the numbers? But the bottom line is that we don't know the environment Governor Walker is going to be in next year for re-election. For Democrats to go, hey, this could be great, they could be in the perfect position to beat Governor Walker, because third terms are hard, because it could be a snap against the White House and President Trump's numbers are bad. But can they execute? Do they have the means to execute with a party that is getting back on its feet with some staff shakeups, from fundraising issues, and two, a field that hasn't really coalesced to see that here's a strong challenger to Governor Walker?
And here's another factor. He won with 52% in 2010, 53% he survived the recall, and then he came back with 52%. So as Charles Franklin says, this is a swing of 3 to 4. But this allows us to quickly recap the governor's 25 years in politics. State Assembly, mm-hmm. a special election, 1993, served till 2002. Then he became Milwaukee County Executive to 2010, when he was elected governor. And as I just said, he won with 52% in 2010, 53% to recall, 54 then, what is it, what, 70 or 71 day run for president?
Yeah.
And then the other factor, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, when you just ask them total fundraised, but just by Walker campaign committees, not the mm-hmm. outside groups, $104 million. So what do you think he's going to spend?
Good question. What's he need to spend? I'm not sure about that yet. But one thing about Walker, too, when he won in 10 and 14, he was running in GOP wave years, and so after 52-53%. This is the first time he's going to run against headwinds, we think. Again, I don't want to predict 18's environment because it's so unsettled, but we think headwinds, how is that going to play for Governor Walker, which may be why you're seeing the state GOP go after hard after Tony Evers about this Middleton teacher
yes.
who viewed inappropriate images at school, made inappropriate comments about girls, junior high girls. They're trying to knock down the field as a safeguard, because they maybe they know that's going to be a little more difficult than people would think.
Yeah. Okay, let's tell you, there was a lot of action. This was the final week that both the Assembly mm-hmm. and Senate were in session. So let's just hit a couple highlights. We had final passage of the first of the second major rewrite of mining rules since 2013. And this would repeal the 1998 law requiring proof that a mine had closed for 10 years without pollution. Sponsors said this could lead to copper and gold mining, but I just want to read comments from both sides. The chief sponsor in the Assembly, Senator Tom Tiffany: we are retaining Wisconsin's high environmental standards. Excuse me. Senator Janet Buley, also from the Northwoods, the other side, the west side: we're giving away the best parts of ourselves. We have clean water, and we need someone to stand up and protect it. What do you look for on this issue going forward? Excuse me.
How many years ago it was we had that the iron mining bill, and there was going to be a boon for northern Wisconsin?
Ashland and Iron Counties.
And nada, because there are other protections out there in our federal law. The tribes up there were concerned about it, and in the end it didn't happen. I'm wanting to see if there's actually going to be a mine opened because of this. It may take a while. There's like some delays in this bill from when you first want to do one to getting a permit and everything.
Yeah, and those delays allow local communities to adopt some mining ordinances. Excuse me.
So it, It could be a while before we know for sure what's going to happen, but that's one. Is there going to be a mine come out of this?
What do you think the Republicans knew to push through a new mining rules and regs bill that they – why? Do you think they're hearing whispers that there is serious interest on the part of some corporates?
I've seen some stories talking about people who think there are deposits out there that can be had. It's also a different environment now than it was in 1998, it was a Lady Smith mine. You were here, but when I wasn't,
yes.
That was the one that raised a lot of concerns from folks back then. So it's a much different environment than it was back then.
And just today, did you see the email from the city administrator in Lady Smith saying, as we go to a new mining rule, there are some benefits that local communities should be aware of? Now, that's a controversial position. It really is. Okay, our legislature has now joined 28 others calling for a federal constitutional convention.
Yes.
This call comes after our federal debt now exceeds $20 trillion. And we're the 28th state. It takes what, 34?
We're 28th. It takes 34 to trigger a convention. It takes 38 to ratify, and they came out of that convention.
Right. Okay. We make the call for the convention, and then a separate bill passed. We would send 7 delegates. But when I look at who sends those 7 delegates, legislative leaders and the gov gets only 1. Do I have that right?
I think it's up to 9 because they gave 1 to the minority leaders in both houses, but it's
okay.
Mostly the majority leader, two top Republican leaders in the assembly right now, unless party control switches, the gov, then 1 each for the Democratic leaders, if party control stays the same. What's interesting about that is that they got 28 in the bag. They were pushing like about another 4 or 5 states. This group kind of went really behind this. Like 5-ish more states besides us this year. One was Virginia. Well, now control's up in the air about Virginia.
That's an excellent point.
So that may be hurt that a little bit. Other states are looking at, like Washington State. The state Senate flipped to Democratic control, so now we have total Democratic control in Washington State. Maine is one. It's split control. The math to get to the 34th state for convention got a little bit harder this week, and to get to 38 to ratify anything is going to be much more difficult looking at just the map we have in the United States. And oh, by the way, as you get closer to that 34th state, like there was people lobbying in the Capitol when this vote was going on, but imagine the last state and you open the door to this Article 5 convention, it will be a circus in your Capitol with the pressures from both sides over that debate, right? Because the thing Democrats raised this week was, yes, there's a bill out there that was passed along with this to say, you can only do this, delegates. But there are concerns from others of, well, that can't supersede the U.S. Constitution that says there are no limits. So I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to tell you which one is right. But you're opening to critics a Pandora's box of allowing people in this environment to go and rewrite the Constitution. Maybe not just the balanced budget amendment, but write a lot of more stuff about this.
As Senator Urbanbach said, and when I was there, they can go to the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. What do you like about all the different ways they can go? But the Republicans say, look, if they stray from their mm-hmm. mission and mandate, which is a balanced budget amendment, $20 trillion in debt this nation, we'll yank them back and send new people who can get it right.
And Dave Craig's answer was, he's one of the kind of backers of this, was, I don't think the things you're talking about, John Urbanbach, are going to get to 38 states. The one thing he said could is a balanced budget amendment. So that's like to him a safeguard of, just because it's proposed, it's going to be done.
Okay. New subject, a bill that would limit recounts is only 1 vote away because, mm-hmm. as you pointed out, the last body added an amendment.
Senate amended amendment to change the per diem for elections ethics commissions because the governor vetoed them down quite a bit in the budget from where they were before.
Okay, but the new standards would be if an election had more than 4,000 votes, only someone within 1% could seek?
Yes.
And if there's less than that, then you have to be within 40?
4,000, less than 4,000 votes, within 40 votes.
Right.
This basically is the Jill Stein rule. Jill Stein, Green Party candidate, got barely just more than 1% of the vote, a distant fourth place presidential race, but she was able to trigger a recount and raise millions of dollars off of asking for it in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan because of the rules that we have. They want to avoid that happening again, and that's why it's basically in place,
yeah.
or will be in place eventually.
So it will be in place, so we are going to do this. Okay, let's take a look at 2 special assembly elections. District 66, these are going to be held January 16th. District 66, to replace the new mayor of Racine,
mm-hmm.
Corey Mason. Is that a safe Democratic seat?
Yes.
Okay. And then in District 58, to replace the late Republican Representative Bob Gannon. Is there a more Republican district?
Oh, that's a good question.
In this assembly?
The key for both of those is going to be the primary mid-December. You know, Merry Christmas to us, by the way.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really watching, is to see how those primaries develop, who gets in. They could be they will be multiple candidate primaries. And that's going to be the key in both of those seats.
Have you heard the number of candidates that would want Mr. Gannon's seat or Corey's?
We've already got, I think, three that were registered early this week. Mason's seat, they just announced this a little while ago, or a couple of days ago. That might take a while to kind of formulate, but in talking to some people around there, they're expecting, you know, several city council members are going to look at it. Other people, I think a former aide to Mason announced she's looking at running, so it'd be a crowded primary.
Right. Okay, perfect segue, because there's going to be a third special election in the state Senate, which leads us to your stock picks. Go ahead.
So rising Sheila Harsdorf, official as of this morning that she's the DATCAP secretary, first female DATCAP secretary in the agency's 88-year history. So a couple of good things for Harsdorf. One, I mean, well-respected, well-liked member of the state legislature, member of the Finance Committee, chair of Universities and Technical Colleges Committee. She is going to go from a job paying, you know, $50,000 to a secretary's job, which pays significantly more. And why is that important? Well, when you've got 16 years in the Senate and 10 in the Assembly, there's a formula for your pension, and the top three grossing years, I think, are part of that. So there's a nice boost for her. It's a great cap to her career. She's 61 years old. This is probably her last stop in public service. I mean, this is a great thing for Sheila Harsdorf. The other thing to look at, though, is how does this affect the state Senate?
Yes.
And in terms of that, we're going to have
Shannon Zimmerman
and Adam Jericho are both looking at it already, both sitting lawmakers in that district. Depending on who wins, you know, one could be a little bit more conservative than Sheila. That would affect the dynamic of the state Senate GOP caucus. Remember, Harsdorf was kind of like this kind of group of Luther Olson, Jerry Petrosky, sometimes Terry Moulton, Rob Coles. They would, you know, sometimes mold things to be a little bit more moderate than they may have been otherwise. She's no longer going to be there. So who's going to be that voice that replaces her? How's that impact negotiations in that caucus, which can be sometimes unruly?
Right.
That's going to be interesting to watch.
Fascinating. Okay, mixed.
Oh, I got to say, though, Dems think because it happened in Virginia this week that there is an opportunity in the 10th. Now, it's a Republican district, so you got to kind of prove it to me a little bit. But they're looking, hey, all these seats that flipped in Virginia, there's a chance there in their minds in the 10th because of it. But it's a different, difficult district because Minneapolis media market, it's expensive to advertise in. You got
St. Croix County, one of the fastest growing, right across the river from the Twin Cities, but
yes.
Okay, mixed.
Balanced budget amendment, we kind of talked about the math. If math got really hard this week with Virginia and Washington State, I don't know if they can get to actually creating a convention, but it shows that there is a pent-up demand among conservatives to try and address the federal debt. People like Dave Craig and Chris Kappinger are saying, look, there is a spending problem in this country. We're going to bankrupt our nation. What do we do? Of course, the flip side from Democrats is, hey, you guys control everything. Just pass a balanced budget on your own. That's proving difficult, though, in Washington, D.C.
How difficult? Okay, falling.
We learned this week opiate prescriptions are down. This is the number was mind-blowing to me. They're down 17 point doses.
I agree.
17.5 million fewer doses in a three-month period compared to a year ago. That's down 12%.
Is that just a state number?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
That's like just the number of doses is kind of mind-blowing.
Phenomenal drop.
But what's happening with John Nygren saying, again, been spearheading a lot of this issue, is that he's looking at Wisconsin with they have a new prescription drug monitoring program that doctors can check to make sure they're not like, some patients not going doctor to doctor to doctor and get like multiple prescriptions. It's better to track that there are efforts being made to look at these things, that's helping. At the same time, we're in the middle of the death rate from from prescription deaths skyrocketing.
Ravaging. West Virginia, ravaging. Dayton,
Ohio. It is a disturbing problem that they'll tell you, they can't do enough right now trying to address this.
Okay. We've had so much news. Here's what we haven't talked about. Mm-hmm. Both houses of the legislature put on the governor's desk, industrial hemp mm-hmm. can again be grown, and we didn't get to the assembly putting limits on body camera footage of police.
That bill's up in the end of the Senate. We're going to wait to see how it happens with him.
So we'll talk about that when it goes to the Senate. Okay, I think we're out of time, but here's my nominee for quote of the week. Hillary Clinton goes to Milwaukee and says, well, I should have come back sooner. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal. enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.